This edition of Commodity Week was recorded on Friday, May 30th, 2008. Commodity Week is a production of WILL AM 580, a broadcasting service of the College of Media at the University of Illinois.
Commodity Week is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333.
Traders spent much of the week with at least one eye on the crude oil and U.S. dollar picks, and the food versus fuel debate continues to heat up. What does it all mean for grain trade? We'll discuss that and more today on Commodity Week. Welcome to Commodity Week. This is Dave Dickey. Later this half hour, we'll talk with Craig Parr of the Andersons in Toledo, Ohio. Our panelists today are Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois, Greg Johnson of the Andersons in Champaign, Illinois, and Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois. Let's open today's discussion with this question, Paul Cooley. The CFTC says it's been investigating the purchase, transportation, storage, and trading of crude oil since December. The commission says it's making the disclosure because of, quote, today's unprecedented market conditions. And on Friday, CFTC officials announced they will release initiatives in the upcoming week for grains and oilseed futures that are consistent with efforts in crude oil futures to increase transparency and ensure index traders do not adversely affect price discovery. What does it all mean for grain traders?
Well, I think the market is very focused on the necessity of transparency in the industry. The CFTC has tremendous authority, and they are putting in place rules and regulations to cover trading around the world and share information with other exchanges. I have to give them a tip of the hat. I think it's the right move at the right time for the industry.
Kurt Kimmel, the funds made some large sales this past week before buying back positions on Friday, and it reminds us that they are responsible for much of the price strength in futures. Would the firming of the U.S. dollar and a break in crude oil futures be a signal for grain traders to move dollars back to Wall Street? And if so, at what levels?
Well, for the big hedge funds or big speculators, it might be a signal to start that movement, which I think we've probably seen a little bit of that take place. But as far as benchmarks to go by, the dollar is a long-term trending vehicle. So if you rally the dollar index up around 90, that could probably stimulate it a bit more, or see crude oil drop below $100 a barrel. That could probably shift money elsewhere. But we got to remember, corn and beans, fundamentally, they are very highly traded due to speculation on the weather and production and supply. And we're entering the time frame in here where June and July and August makes or breaks the corn and bean crop, which will override any other factor.
Greg Johnson, at least one market segment, commercials, would welcome a price break, if for nothing else, to get some more buying on the books. How are elevators weathering the margin call storm of the last several months, and is it still a factor impacting basis?
Yes, we've seen most of the commercial elevators dodge the bullet this in the spring rally. In the last couple of months, the corn market has actually sold off 30 or 40 cents off of its highs. And the bean market, while extremely volatile, has not made new highs since March. We're close to the old highs, but not making new highs. So if you take the fact that we have not made new highs in conjunction with the fact that elevators are liquidating their inventory throughout the year, and that raises more capital for them to use for their margin calls, the situation is not as critical as it was 3 months ago. Now, looking ahead, though, we're entering, as Kurt said, the most volatile 3 months of the year. And if we have any kind of production hiccups and markets make new highs, those liquidity issues will become a problem again.
July corn had a high on the week of 607, a low of 572 and three quarters. July corn ending the week at 599 and a quarter, down one half from last week. December, 626 and a half, up three quarters from a week ago. Kurt, there are a lot of outside factors at work creating uncertainty in the marketplace. You have USDA opening up the CRP without penalty for grazing this fall. You have a huge world conference next week on the food versus fuel debate. You have lawmakers hearing plenty back home this week from lobbyists on both sides of the food versus fuel issue. In your mindset, what are the implications of food versus fuel heading into summer for grain traders?
Well, it's going to be public opinion, and when the public has to pay higher grocery bills and higher gas bills, it's going to get everybody's attention. But the public wants cheap food and cheap gas, and it won't happen. But if you take the fuel for food, you know, how much higher would gasoline be if we didn't have the ethanol dumped into there? Then, too, I think the public needs to realize, too, that we're not stealing all this food and making ethanol. We got byproduct, DDGs, and that's greatly helped the livestock feeders. So there's some great debate there, but high prices are a concern, and it's definitely going to be front and center, and we'll get more of a reaction as we go through the growing season.
Paul, corn futures have been trapped in a trading range for the past 2 months. And this week it traded at the bottom of its range despite slow emergence rates, widespread reports of replanting, and growing suspicion that the national yield will eventually need to be adjusted downward by USDA. What do you make of the trading action, and does it suggest we are soon going to break out of its trading range in one direction or another?
Number one, I think that we have a major threat to break out, and I think that the weather is going to encourage that, and the forecast and the delayed plant in southern Illinois and the flash flooding in Iowa, one would have to basically go along with the idea of breaking out on the upside. I also think that the ethanol, there's a lot of new ethanol plants coming on stream. Also, there is the general feeling that export demand should also hang in there. So I think that the demand for corn is good to excellent this particular time. And with stabilizing commodity markets, I think that there is a general feeling it can go higher.
Are there a lot of trap shorts in this marketplace?
I think that the market is oversold, and I think that was one reason why we did see a violent market move on Friday.
Soybeans for July, a high on the week of 1390, a low of 1307 and three quarters. July beans ending the week at 1363 and a half, down 4.5 from last week. November beans ending the week at 1354 and one half, up one from a week ago. Kurt, longer-term new crop carryout remains very friendly for soybeans. And in the short term, the market continues to hold together despite some liquidation this past week. Look at the closes that we've had this week. Down 20 and a quarter, up 25, down 50, up 40 and three quarters. And for the week, down just 4.5 points basis the July contract. What do you take away from the trading week? And when we finally do break out of what has been a two-month sideways pattern, which way do we zig?
Well, we spent the week worrying a lot, seeing a lot of roller coaster, but as you mentioned, we finished the week just about unchanged. So I think we're going to see a lot of that. When you look at the chart, the technical picture suggests there's support in November beans down around this 13 to 12.75 area. Resistance is going to be up around 14. And if you're looking for a move, I'd say a break out of that range could propel the market a dollar higher on the upside or a dollar lower on the downside. I wouldn't be surprised to see both happen.
Paul, soybean planting and emergence are well behind schedule. Supportive features or something more for the bulls to rally around, given what will be a very wet weekend and more showers on the way next week?
Well, I think the late plantings is definitely a bullish factor. The exports are a lot better than anticipated, particularly with the problems with Argentina and continuing their export programs. And I think that there is a feeling that South America is going to be rather expanding their acreage on a small note this coming winter. All this adds up to this cool, wet spring could also reduce bean yields as well this fall.
Do you look for some more old crop, new crop spreading next week?
Well, that's an interesting spread, and it hasn't been very good news to the nearby bull spreader. My general impression is that a person probably should take more of a realistic approach, that when the trend does change and that spread, follow it, because I think that the carryover could be extremely small, possibly as low as 120 million bushels, and that would put some extra fireworks in the, both the basis and the futures.
July wheat had a high on the week of 768, a low of 730 and three quarters. July wheat ending the week at 761 and a half, up 9 from last week. July of 2009, 838 and a half, up 10 from a week ago. Greg, the wheat futures this week made new lows for the move. Harvest is beginning. Prices at the Gulf are easing. And for the most part, winter wheat looks pretty good around the world. And our sources say that at least half of the open interest in longs in the wheat pit are index funds. So are we headed for another leg down, something under $7?
I think we can go lower. I thought wheat at $8 a few months ago was a good sale, and rode it all the way up to 12 before it came back down. So wheat can go lower, yes. We do have a lot of soft red winter wheat. That crop does look good, especially with all the recent rains. The only concerns that I would mention are dry weather in Australia and Argentina, and the fact that we have sold off $5 from where we were just 2 or 3 months ago. So fundamentally, from a supply and demand point of view, yes, we could go lower, but we'll want to keep our eyes on the Argentina and Australian wheat crop.
June live cattle had a high on the week of 97.05, a low of 95.65. June live cattle ending the week at 96.52 and a half, up 35 from last week. August feeders ending the week at 116.02 and a half, up 80 from a week ago. Lean hogs for June, a high on the week of 77.95 and a low of 76. June lean hogs ending the week at 77.75. Kurt, will the opening of the CRP for hay and grazing mean more demand for young cattle?
It helped the feeder market this past week, but you know, you have to question the weather, because that would really help if we'd be in a drought situation. Barring we don't have no drought, I think livestock producers are pretty well lined up with pasture, pretty well lined up with hay. I think the livestock producer will put that in his back pocket, need be, because it's going to involve building fence and a lot of extra things involved with that. But it's definitely going to have the livestock producer with a wild card to use if he would be short on grain or grass.
Paul, put on your speculator hat for a moment. Not the hedger hat, the speculator hat. And look at that side of the market. What do you think is the best bet at the moment for any commodity? And more important, how do you play it?
You know, I think one of the best trades that I'm looking at here is the narrowing of the spread of corn and wheat. I think that the wheat crop is going to be quite large, and I think that the corn spread with possibly smaller acres will also be somewhat supportive. So long corn, short wheat looks like a good opportunity in my book.
Same question for you, Kurt.
Well, probably more bang for your dollar in our mind might be getting the right way the bean market. The bean market's going to move one way or another, and for leverage, that might be the spot to be.
I'm going to keep hammering at you, Kurt. $1 up, $1 down.
Yeah.
Pick one.
Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised both happen. This market is just incredible. When you look what's taken place over the last year, I walk in the office, I'm never surprised. It's just amazing. It's a dynamic thing to be in. We've dreamt about this for years. We need to figure out ways to manage it and use it to your advantage.
Greg, what are some of the more pressing issues at the moment for the elevator industry?
I think right now, trying to just to make sure that the margin risk is covered. We've dodged one bullet, as I said earlier, but corn could very, very easily go to $7 this summer or higher. You know, nobody would have thought that a year ago, but $7 to $8 corn on the board is going to cause tremendous problems. And if corn goes that high, then you're looking at beans in the $16 to $18 range. And both of those cause extremely huge issues for elevators to maintain liquidity.
July oats had a settlement on the week of 382, down 3.5 from a week ago. You can receive this broadcast via podcast. It's as easy as going to your computer and subscribing on our website. Go to WILLAG.org and click on the podcast link on the right-hand navigation window. You'll never miss a Commodity Week broadcast again. You can also subscribe to our daily agricultural programming, the pre-opening and opening commodity market reports, as well as the closing market report. AM 580 Agricultural Podcasts. It's your agricultural marketing advantage.
I'm Steve Hilberg with the Midwestern Regional Climate Center located at the Illinois State Water Survey in Champaign. Illinois residents rode a temperature roller coaster this week with warmer and more humid weather on Memorial Day, followed by a temperature crash that left temperatures hovering in the 50s on Tuesday. The weather gradually warmed up the rest of the week as high pressure drifted east and winds back to a more southerly direction. Temperatures this week range from near normal in southern Illinois to 6 degrees below normal in northern Illinois. When all is said and done, May will likely end up 4 to 5 degrees below normal statewide. Precipitation this week was much above normal in the southern portions of the state, where more than 4 inches of rain fell in locations in southwestern Illinois on Monday and Tuesday. Rainfall was also normal to above normal across far northern Illinois, with most of that rain occurring late in the week. Across east central and central Illinois, rainfall was generally below normal. May precipitation is near to above normal statewide as May comes to a close. A frontal system will push through Illinois this weekend, then likely stall out over the Ohio Valley. It will begin to push north as a warm front by midweek. As a result, there will be a chance for scattered showers and thunderstorms in southern Illinois early in the week, then over the remainder of the state by midweek. Temperatures will start out the week near normal, rising to a little bit above normal by mid to late in the week. For the Midwestern Regional Climate Center in Champaign, I'm Steve Hilberg.
This is Dave Dickey, and our panelists today are Kurt Kimmel, Greg Johnson, and Paul Cooley. Joining us by phone is Craig Parr, Manager of Commodity Hedging for the Andersons. Thanks for being with us today, Craig.
As always, thanks for having me, Dave.
This week, we got word that at least one major grain elevator is asking producers wishing to forward contract at least 25,000 bushels to provide new information about their operations, including the number of acres, types of crops planted, and actual yield numbers from previous years. What are your thoughts?
Well, I'm not surprised, number one. Obviously, with this whole issue of change in when it comes to borrowing capacity for many commercial accounts and the run-up in commodity markets, I think you'll see a couple, three things. One, there is less cash available. We know that today for ag and for industry in general. Two, lenders want and are requiring more for commercial accounts to know about their own personal counterparty risk with their customers. So oftentimes, if you're asking for increased borrowing capacity, you have to know more about the customer. And number three, we will certainly see more of it to come. I think, as we look at our industry, it is changing in many ways. And this, many times, if you're just a normal consumer going out and getting a simple cell phone, you may get the cell phone for free, but you have to fill out a credit app in order to get the service.
Questions for Craig, Kurt Kimmel.
Greg, you feel that maybe elevators are a little bit better off than they were last winter on putting some new implications in place, maybe trying to gets more credit for this 08-09 crop?
I do, and in many ways, I think that markets do force efficiencies, and what I mean by that is that oftentimes if you find that certain put-through elevators or put-through accounts may have borrowing capacity, short-term borrowing capacity, that is probably too big, and in other cases, large accounts may not have enough. So what I think the market has done is it started to have people think longer-term about the implications of high-priced commodities and volatile commodities and what that means to their debt structure. So a lot of times you'll see that the people will probably think about moving short-term debt to long-term, getting lines in place, getting borrowing capacity in place, and then be better prepared for both increased borrowing needs, customer offerings, getting more comfortable with the counterparty risk so that the banker feels more comfortable.
Greg Johnson?
Hey, Craig, we're starting to hear people complain about the high food prices, pointing their fingers at the ethanol industry, and while we're trying to deflect that to the oil run-up and price of oil run-up, I don't know how successful we're doing that. But on the one hand, we have these people complaining about high food prices. On the other hand, the government is still requiring that we use more and more ethanol each year. In that kind of an environment, with that kind of conflict, what does the ethanol industry do? Does it continue to expand, or what happens in that situation?
Well, I think the ethanol industry does expand, still continue, but in different venues. The feedstock maybe goes away from corn, and people throw billions upon billions about a different feedstock that's not food-related. Now, the debate can certainly be, and we've seen, all over the place, and people have crunched numbers every which way. But I think that the ability to grow is tougher. It is a highly volatile business. It is commodity-oriented, and you have to be very diligent about your commodity risk management plan. Bankers want to see that as well. Traditional, I don't want to say cowboyish, but if you want to live in the spot market at all times, that doesn't necessarily cut it. And I think people who do it very well can certainly justify an expansion to a project or being involved in a project. One significant difference.
Polk.
A year ago, I think now banks are certainly reluctant or have less available cash to spend in that space. They will also require that those who are moving forward with ethanol projects change the capital structure and be less leveraged. In other words, may have to put up 60% instead of what used to be 30 or 40.
Paul Cooley.
Hi, Craig. Well, let's focus on wheat. This basis is wide. Will the farmer sell it at this price level, and will the elevator move corn out to put wheat in those bins? What's going to happen here, and what's your opinion of that corn-wheat spread that I talked about?
Well, I think the corn-wheat spread got to unbelievable numbers. We knew that. Certainly the break has occurred, all led by wheat primarily. And, you know, I think that one of the panelists today even suggested that the wheat numbers, the fundamentals of wheat are starting to come through in price. What hasn't maybe followed suit has been the basis. When the market ran up to $12, basis had to do all the work to justify where the true cash market was. Markets were running up and trading $12, $13, and you know what the Minneapolis wheat did as well. But basis really couldn't keep up. Now we're seeing a drop in wheat prices, and basis still, generally speaking, are relatively cheap. I think what we'll have to find is that the farmer typically doesn't store wheat. We'll see that move during the July period. We should see basis start to appreciate, 6-8 weeks shortly thereafter, depending on what flat price does. So we should see an appreciation after that.
Greg, what's your observation on planting progress? What are some areas you might be concerned with, and are we going to actually lose some corn acres, you think?
Well, I feel good about Ohio. I feel okay about Michigan. Indiana and Illinois, I know, and certainly Iowa, are trouble spots. In fact, I heard a note the other day that was talking about seed companies talking about a couple, 2 to 5 million acres that could be replanted in corn. That doesn't surprise me, and it could be in the 5 million or it could be 2 million. I really don't know. I would say that this year's start has been disappointing, let's put it that way, and better in the east than what we would have typically seen, worse in the west.
Hey, Craig, the CFTC this week has talked about trying to rein in speculation in the oil market and in the commodity markets in general. The government has really brought a lot of it on themselves, in my opinion, with the cheaper dollar, and the low interest rates, forcing investors to look for alternative places to put that money, and now all of a sudden they want to limit that speculation. Is there anything that the CFTC or the government can do, or should they be doing something to limit this so-called excessive speculation?
Well, I think markets have a wonderful way of weeding out inefficiencies. Again, I've said that once before, but you know, $15 wheat didn't cut it, $9 or $7 corn, $6 corn, and $15, $16, $17 beans. That tends to over time rectify things. But to answer your question more direct about the CFTC, CFTC is getting probably political pressure to do something about speculative interest. We learned that this week. I'd be very surprised if they stepped in to limit speculative interest. What they really want to do is create a fair, equitable playing ground, make sure that there isn't any unfair leverage that's created in a speculative or an index fund versus a traditional hedger. I think they want more transparency in the overall market to make sure that nobody's really leveraging things up in an unfair way. That's their role. I think they would admit that to be the case. I'd be very, very surprised if there was limits to speculative participation.
Do you think, you know, the Secretary of Agriculture basically opened up 24 million acres of CRP for haying and grazing. 4.5 million acres are supposedly going to be turned into cropland this winter. What's your general opinion? Will the USDA open up the CRP for more production agriculture, and when?
I think the short answer would be yes. That is an option which seems to make a lot of, well, at least seems to make some sense today. I think it will be tough to occur in 2008. I think the most likely time frame where that can naturally occur is 2009 after further discussion. And I think without having a direct immediate impact on the 08 prices, people can live with something that says longer term, and probably the quickest capability or ability for the government to have an impact would certainly be to look at what do they do with CRP acres.
Greg, do you have a feel on maybe how much old crops still left in the farmer's hands and how much new crops already been marketed by a producer?
Oh, that's a good question. I've been somewhat removed from that. And Greg or other panelists might be able to answer it better than I am. So I won't take a stab at it. I'll say that feels a bit lighter on the old crop. I think that people in general, for several reasons, for the new crop, either because they have had an inability to hedge forward or for the fact that it's been too volatile for them to do it. It feels lighter on the 08 as well, new crop.
Craig, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you very much.
Craig Parr of the Andersons in Toledo, Ohio. And that wraps up this edition of Commodity Week. We would like to thank our panel, Greg Johnson of the Andersons in Champaign, Illinois, Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois, and Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois. Remember, you can access Commodity Week programs and listen to daily agricultural programming on your computer. Our site on the World Wide Web is WILLAG.org. Click on the Analysis Audio tab or Commodity Week tab for the analysis of your choice. This is Dave Dickey.
Commodity Week is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333.